Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Ayin Tes and Shabbos. When the eighth parak of Shabbos, we're talking about carrying the Malach of Hotzah. And in our discussion on the Malach of Hotzah, so we did the Mishnah, which is found on the bottom of Ayin Chesamad Aleph and continues through Ayin Chesamad Beis, and the Mishnah talks about the shear for carrying various items. We are now speaking about receipts, the carrying of receipts. You cross the toll, you cross a bridge, maybe certain roads, or they're tolled. And so there's the toll collector. And what happens is that the transaction, you give the toll collector money, he gives you a receipt, and now you're good to go. You can now cross the bridge. And the question that the Mishnah says that the amount of paper that you'd be chayav if you carried on Shabbos is the amount of paper where the receipt is written on. In the time of the Mishnah time, the Gemara, the receipt was a very simple document. It was a small piece of paper that had two letters on it. That was the entirety of their receipt. Simple receipt. Does not say which letters. The Gemara nor Rashi says which letters they are. But the Rashi says is that they were written in larger letters. The font size of the letters were larger. I guess apparently the receipt was just simple evidence that you in fact paid. So there were two letters that were written. Perhaps, I'm just suggesting, the letters were changed daily so that you couldn't use yesterday's receipt for today. Anyway, as the case goes, that's what we're talking about, and we are in the Gemara. So we're already towards the bottom of Ayin Chesamad Beis, and we're starting Tanur Rabbanan. This is where we left off yesterday. Hamotzei Kesher Mochsin Ad Shelo Ha'ero Lamoch is Chayev. If I take out Kesher Mochsin, so if I take out the receipt on Shabbos, I carry it on Shabbos, so if it's before I showed it off to the tax collector, to the toll man, so then you'd be chayav because it's obviously significant. It's a significant piece of paper. But once I showed it to the moches, so now it's a worthless piece of paper. So says the Tanakhama. Rav Yehuda Omer, af misher lamoches, even after I showed it to the toll collector, to the tax collector. Chayav, you're going to be chayav mimish tzarech lo, because you're still going to need to hold on to this piece of paper. Good. So we have a braisa. The braisa presents two opinions. The first opinion is, only before I show it to the toll collector is it to me significant, but afterwards it's no longer significant, therefore I wouldn't be chayav for carrying it. Not that it's okay to carry it. In other words, it's just not a chayav, it's not chayav a carbon chatas. It's not a malacha, it's not an isra malacha. Could still be an isra derabanan, but you're not. That's not the malacha of Otsah. And according to Rav Yehuda, even after I showed it to the toll collector, it's still significant, my beinayu. So the Gemara now asks the obvious question, what's the nekudah machlokas between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda? The Gemara will offer a couple suggestions. Amar Abayika beinayu rihiti muhsa. So Abaye says the difference between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda is the following. There are auditors. You want to know how to say auditors in old French? Courants. Okay. Quran. Okay. They are particular auditors. Shiratan Acher, however, I'm reading Rashi. Lahalil Aleihem. Shalonasno Ameches. So, basically, auditors. In other words, people who suspect that you did not pay your taxes. And so what they do is they run after you to make sure whether or not you paid, and you got to hold on to your receipts, much like you have to hold on to your files that you filed with the IRS for, what is it, they say, 7 years? So you got to hold on to this receipt because here comes the auditors. So therefore, you still have to hold your receipt even after you pay the toll, and even after you show the toll collector that you paid, you still have to hold on to your receipt. At least that's the opinion of Rav Yehuda, and therefore, according to Rav Yehuda, the receipt is valuable to you even after you showed it off. Now that's Rav Yehuda. Now how are you going to explain the Tanakama? So I continue reading in Rashi. The Tanakama lo matzil elahachi dechi rehita basrei hadolagave moches. Well, so the Tanakhama is of the opinion that they're going to run after you, that's true, but then what you're going to simply say to him is, okay, let's go to the toll collector. Toll collector will tell you that I paid. So and he'll tell you that I showed him the receipt. So in other words, it's a machlokus over here. The first explanation, the braisa, it's a machlokus of whether or not you still need the receipt even after you show it to the toll collector as proof that you paid. That's one possible explanation of the machlokus. Rav Ashi Amar Chad Moches Ika Beinayu. Rav Ashi gives a different explanation, and that is How many toll collectors are we talking about? How many toll men are we talking about? Chan mokitzi kemenemene shetzarech lo laharis lamoches sheni. The amalei chazi gavre de moches ani. In other words, even after having showed it to the original tax collector, are you still going to want it to show it to other tax collectors as well? Now, why would you show it to another tax collector? So just simply to show that you are a payer. Right? Rashi explains, Pamim shikish mochis gadol shetorech lo lamod al hagesher kol hayom, o mamana mochis katan. So the, by the way, Rashi's Girsa of the Gemara is a little bit different than our Girsa of the Gemara. In our Girsa of the Gemara, we have the words moches sheni. Rashi calls it moches katan, but it's the same basic idea. The primary tax collector and the secondary tax collector. So the primary tax collector, so he's an administrator. So what is he going to do? He's going to hang out the bridge all the whole day? He's got much more important things to do. He needs to drink coffee. He's got a life. So what he does is that he hires people to go ahead and to make sure that people are paying the toll and not trying to sneak by. So originally, when I showed off I paid it off to the gadol. And Rav Yehuda's of the opinion, okay, you may have shown it off to the principal person in charge of collection of taxes, but then you have all of his, his underlings, his minions of watchdogs. So in order to pass over the bridge, you're still going to need to hold your receipt. That's the opinion of Rav Yehuda. And what's the Tanakhama going to say? The Tanakhama ain't Sarah Chlosha Agad, Mosel of Siman, Dvarim, Vermelakatan Vahomer. And the Chachamim say no. All the circumstances I agree to, there are going to be underlings who are going to be checking things out, but you don't need a receipt. What the Gadol is going to do is the Gadol is going to give you some sort of password. You're going to say over the password to the underlings, and you'll get over the bridge. But you still don't need the receipt. Okay? Fine. Machlok is between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda. Once you paid the toll to go over the bridge, and once you've shown the receipt, are you still going to be chai for carrying it? Tanakam says, no, you're not. Rav Yehuda says, yes, you are. And then the Gemara gave two explanations of how do we understand this machlokas. Next. Tanur Rabbana Amosi Shtarchov. Okay. Now we move on in discussion, but basically this is going to be a very similar discussion. But instead of talking about tolls now, we're going to talk about documents. Loan documents. Now let's just talk about the structure of a loan back in the good old days. Not much has changed in the past 2,000 years, but here's basically how it worked. I need money. I go to Phil and I say, Phil, do me a favor. I need a loan. No problem at all. Phil lends me money, but as much as he likes me and as much as he trusts me, but we're going to write a document. It's always the best thing to do is to write a document. And so we write up a document, and he is now going to hold the document. He's going to hold the note. And eventually, of course, when I do pay him back, so now he's going to give me back the document. It's really that simple a transaction. By the way, I pay for the fees. I pay for the writing up the document. All right, I'm the borrower, obviously. The burden is going to be on me to pay for all fees. Good. All right, so now we've just described how it is that we write a loan. So obviously him holding that note of indebtedness, that IOU, is going to be to him, that's money, because that now is going to be the evidence and the proof that I, in fact, owe the money. And the question now becomes, on Shabbos, I know we're going to move from the world of mamonos. We're not really interested right now in the monetary aspect of this transaction. We're now interested in what now happens when Phil walks outside with this piece of paper in his hands. Is he going to be chayv on the malach of hotzah? And the question really becomes, is that piece of paper valuable to him? So before I pay the loan, we all understand, of course that piece of paper is valuable to him, because that's his ticket to getting his loan paid back. The question over here in the Braisa is, what if after I paid the loan, does that piece of paper have any value to him? So here we now go with a discussion of, what happens when I carry on Shabbos a shtar chov, a note of indebtedness, after the loan was paid up? So we start off, Tanur Rabbanan Amosi shtar chov ashlo paro chayef. Mi sheparo pater. So the Tanakam is of the opinion that once I paid up back the loan, so then that piece of paper becomes a valueless piece of paper, and you would not be chayef for carrying it. Again, I'll say the same thing I said earlier. You can't carry it outside on Shabbos, but It doesn't have value, so therefore you're not chayv a carbon chatas. This is not the malach of otzah for carrying it, so says the Tanakhama. Rav Yehuda Amir, af misha paro chayav. And Rav Yehuda disagrees. He says, no, even after I paid back the money, the note still has value, and therefore, if you were to carry it out in the Rishus HaRabim, you'd be chayav. Mimnei shetzarech lo, because I need that note. Now, there's a lot of points that are unclear about this brisa. Certainly, the first part of the brisa makes all the sense in the world. If I didn't pay back the note has value. And therefore, you'd be chayav for carrying it on Shabbos. But what we are discussing over here is, what if after I pay the note, and the brisa says, mimnei shetzarech lo, because he needs it, so therefore, the note's still going to have value. Now, the brisa doesn't describe who the he is, and so there's much to discuss over here. Okay, so my beinayhu, Amar Rav Yosef said, Nagmar now wants to know. Let's give an explanation between what's the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda. Why does the Tanakhama say that after the note is paid up, the note becomes a valueless piece of paper? And why does Rav Yehuda disagree? We're going to give no less than four different explanations in terms of how to understand the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda. And we begin now the first explanation, which is provided by Rav Yosef. My beinayu, I'm Rav Yosef. Also l'shoshtar parua, ike beinayu. Rabbanim savri, also l'shoshtar parua. Rav Yehuda savri, mutter l'shoshtar parua. Is Phil allowed to hold on to the note after I paid it? So the Chachamim said, no, he's not. The Chachamim prohibited him from holding the note, and for obvious reasons. Because what's going to happen if he holds the note is he's going to come back to me. Now, Phil's a bad example because he's Phil's a terrible example because he's scrupulous. So, but what he could, yeah, I understand. Well, okay, yeah, it's worth a try. So and what he would do is he would come to me even after I paid back the note, and he would say, "Hey, give me the money." I said, "But I paid it already." He'll say, "Yeah, you may argue that you paid it already, but I'm holding a shtar chov, and that shtar chov is evidence that you owe me the money." So the Chachamim are of the opinion, Asur la'adam la'ashar shtar chov, it is forbidden for a person to hold a shtar chov after he paid. And it's interesting because again, essentially what the Gemara now is arguing is, because the Chachamim say it's Asur, therefore that piece of paper now becomes a valueless piece of paper after I paid back the note. The Chachamim now basically stripped that piece of paper of any of its weight or value, because they now prohibit you from holding it. And the reason why they prohibit you from holding it is because they don't want you coming back at me after I paid it back. So, and because of this Isser Chachamim, so now on Shabbos, it translates now into Hilchos Shabbos. On Shabbos, now when I walk out with that piece of paper into Rishus HaRambim, I didn't take anything out. Anything of real value. Because the Chachamim say it's Asr.
But in terms of money, change the situation, I can still ask for it.
I understand, and I also find it to be interesting that the Isser Chachamim, the Isser Chachamim turns that piece of paper into a valuable piece of paper. I also find it to be interesting, and Rav Yehuda disagrees, and Rav Yehuda says no, mutter la'adam la'ashos shtar chov. It's permitted for a person to hold the shtar chov. Now it's hard to understand without any more context, why would Rav Yehuda say it's mutter? Right, maybe it's mutter because, we're just trying to understand the position in of itself. Maybe I'm suggesting maybe it's mutter because, let's say, for example, I didn't pay all the fees yet. And so what Phil's waiting for me to do is, look, I know you paid back the loan and I appreciate it, but also the fees, you didn't pay the scribe for writing the note. So maybe Phil's holding the document for that reason. Hard to understand why it would be mutter. But whatever the case is, that's the explanation of the machlokas, at least according to Rav Yosef. Okay, that's our first explanation of the machlokas. So Abaye says, no, I don't like that explanation. Let's start off with the following assumption. Everybody agrees that also la'adam la'ashor shtar parua. Once I paid back the note, Phil's not allowed to hold on to that note anymore. That note must be destroyed. And by the way, out of just simple prudency, what I need to do is I need to, after I pay the note, I say, okay, Phil, give me the note. Right, give it now, let me have it, and then my next move, of course, is to tear it up or burn it. The machlokis over here between the Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim is the following. Let's say we're mod de b'shtar chov. In other words, we wrote a note, but I'm over here saying I owe him the money. Meaning, I haven't paid back the note yet. Phil's holding on to the note. And now it's just a simple admission on my part. Yeah, I owe the money. Now, we have to, in order to understand this second explanation offered by Abaye, we need to know one piece of background information. How does Phil collect on his note? Well, first of all, what is the note? The note basically says, I owe him money. Who signs on the note? Interestingly enough, not me. I don't sign on the note. The lender doesn't sign on the note. What do? We have two witnesses. Two witnesses come forward and they say, yes, there was an exchange of money. Yes, Phil lent money to me. And we all write all this information on the note, including the date, including the amount. And then the two witnesses sign. So really, the entire force of the note is backed by their two witnesses who signed on the note. Okay? And Min HaTorah, now what happens is that with that now note in his hand, he has the power to go ahead and to collect. And by the power of two witnesses now, basically that note is testimony that I owe him the money. Good. That's all Min HaTorah. But then basically what the Chachamim did is the Chachamim came in and they created a safety measure. Where the Chachamim, even though Min HaTorah, everything I described works, the Chachamim said, in order for Phil to collect, there has to be certification of the note. What's called Kiyum Shtaros. You want to learn more about Kiyum Shtaros? Second Perek of Ksuvos. It's a little bit of a difficult sugya. But second Perek of Ksuvos, Yitzayin and Ches, around that area. So the discussion of the whole process of Kiyum Hashtar. And Kiyum Hashtar basically is either we're going to get the two original witnesses or we'll get two other people who know what their signature looks like. Come in, validate that this is in fact the signatures, right? Either the two original or two other people. These are in fact the signatures. We'll go to Basin. Basin will stamp, yes, this document was validated, Kiyum Hashtar, and then we move on. Phil's able to collect his note. Good. This is the whole process of what's called Kiyum Hashtar. And so the question over here is a very simple question. Phil has a note. I'm admitting I owe the money, and I'm admitting I haven't paid yet. Do we have to go through the process of Kiyum Hashtar, even though there's admission on both parties? Phil's admitting he owes me the money. I'm admitting I owe the money. We have the document. The document is signed by two witnesses. So do we have to now go through this additional step of Kiyum Hashtaros when all parties agree that the money needs to be paid? This is the machlokus between Rav Yehuda and the Tana Kama, and this is Abaye's explanation. So Amar Abaye could, I'm sorry, Abaye Amar Dekulei Amar Salashos Shaparur Avahach B'mod B'Shtar Shekasvo Shet Tzarech L'Kaimo Kemiflegi. Tana Kama Stavar Mod B'Shtar Shekasvo Tzarech L'Kaimo. The Tana Kama is of the opinion this is due process. Even if there's admission on both parties, we still need to go through due process, and you still need Kiyum Shtar. So even though I admit I owe the money, Phil still needs to be Mekayim Hashtar, which means then that for him that document is very important. And Rav Yehuda Savar Mod B'Shtar Shekasro and Tzarech L'Kaimo. And Rav Yehuda says, no, you don't need Kiyum Hashtar. So now, good. So this is our explanation of the Braisa. I'll tell you the problem with the explanation. It's a very simple problem. That's not what the Braisa says. The Braisa says, Ad Shelo Paro, Umi Sheparo. Meaning the Braisa says that the two cases are either before it's paid or after it's paid. What Abaye is doing is he's explaining the Braisa, but it's not following the words of the Braisa. He's saying it's either I don't admit to the document versus when I do admit to the document. But the Braisa is flipping everything on whether it's paid or not paid. Ad Shiyomer Lova Parati Velo Parati. And what we're going to have to do in order to defend this Pshat of Abaye is we're going to have to reinterpret the Braisa. Meaning, even though the Braisa says Ad Shelo Paro versus Mishaparo, we're going to understand the Braisa mean until Ad Shiyomer Lo Parati versus Velo Parati. Okay. So that is our second explanation of the Braisa. Rava Amar Dekulei Amar Mod B'Shar Shekasvo Shetzarech L'Kaimo. Rava is going to offer now a third possible explanation of this braisa. This braisa that says, again, let's go back to the original wording of the braisa. Before I pay, the note obviously has significance. Phil carries it on Shabbos, he'll be chayv. After I paid, so the Tanakhama says that after I paid, the Tanakhama says you'll be potter, and Rav Yehuda says you're going to be chayv after I paid. What is the Nekudah Machlokas? Rav Amar Dekulei Amamo Debesha Shekhas V'Shetzarach L'Kaima. So we're going to go back to, first of all, You can't hold the shtar after you paid it. That's number one. Number two, a document always needs to be certified, even if the borrower admits that he owes the money. It still needs to be certified as well. Over here, what the issue is, do we write receipts? Tanakama Sava Kosvin Shover, Rav Yehuda Sava in Kosvin Shover, and the Tanakama says you write receipts, and the Rav Yehuda says you do not write receipts. Now, before I plug it into the Gemara over here, again, let's just take a moment to give a little bit of an introduction to this topic of writing a receipt. Nowadays, obviously, it's very common for receipts to be written. We write receipts for everything, right? Even the smallest transaction, there's going to be a receipt written up. Okay. What's the problem with receipts? Intuitively, we all know what the problem with receipts are. We hate receipts, right? Receipts basically mean, I know in the good old days, people used to keep receipts and file receipts and, okay. Now, basically, what happens to your receipts? I know I'm describing my own life right now, but they get collected somewhere in a pile, and eventually you sift through them and you just basically start throwing them out. It's paperwork. It's burdensome. When we're now talking about our original loan, where Phil lent me the money and now he's holding a note, and I pay it. So do we ask him to write me a receipt? So this is a machlokas between Tanayim. Now the argument to make that he should write me a receipt is because, look, I need evidence that I in fact paid the loan. So let's write me a receipt. Here's the problem. The problem is that if you're writing me a receipt, you're essentially saying Phil doesn't have to give me back the loan document. In other words, at any time that Phil comes afterwards and says, hey, I'd like my loan, I'll say I paid. Well, he says, prove it. So if we subscribe to the position of that you're allowed to write a shover, you're allowed to write a receipt, I'm now put on the hot seat. The onus of proof now is going to be on me to now procure my receipt and to show it to Beis Din and say, hey, look, I paid, here's my receipt. So once you subscribe to the position of Kosvin Shover, that you write a shover, I'm now put in that onerous position of having to forward my receipt and show my receipts to say that I paid. If, however, you subscribe to the position of Ein Kosvin Shover, so now we don't write receipts. And if we don't write receipts, once I pay back the note, I take back the note. That note comes back to me. So this is a general discussion of whether Kosvin Shover Ein Kosvin Shover. And the Gemara now is going to tie it into our discussion over here. Now, to make matters just a little more complicated, Rashi over here toys with two girsas of the Gemara. The first one, he quotes the first one, but he does not like the first one. So I'm going to go right to Rashi's preferred pshat, which is essentially how we have in our Gemara as well. I'm going to look to Rashi. Hachi Garcinan. Okay, I'm going right down. I'm halfway through Rashi, where Rashi gives the pshat that he prefers. Tana kama sever kosin shover v'hachi kamar misha parlo v'votzi omal v'b'shabes pater shenu tzarech lo. Meaning, if after I pay the receipt, the malva, the lender, goes in and carries the note document outside, he's not chayev. It's a worthless piece of paper. Because look, after the loan is paid up, here's what everyone's interested in, especially the lova. Destroy the document. The malva is not allowed to hold the document anymore. It's an issur for him to hold it. The lova, even after he collects the document back, you know what he's going to do with it. He's going to tear it up. He's going to burn it. He's going to destroy it. He's not going to use the document as a cup holder. He's not going to use the document as something to wrap up his bottles with. Meaning he's going to destroy it. And And what about the fact that maybe the Malva holds on to the note? Well, the Tanakhama says kos v'shover, meaning that the borrower is going to have a receipt saying that the loan is in fact paid. So that's all the opinion of the Tanakhama. Rav Yehuda Savra in kos v'shover. Now Rav Yehuda disagrees and says, no, on principle you do not write a receipt. Hilkach tzarech hu amalva debay adure v'ilamaha dele chos v'tovalo mashaparo delo sagile b'shover. Because Rav Yehuda says that you don't write receipts, so therefore that means, according to Rav Yehuda, the loan document is still going to have value even after the loan document is paid up. And so therefore, if it's carried out outside, you're going to be chayiv, according to Rav Yehuda, even after it's paid. Okay. That is how Rashi understands the machlokas between the Tanakam and the Chachamim. That was a third explanation in the Machlokas, and finally we get to number four. Rav Ashi Amar Min Mishet Tzarech La'aros L'Bachov Sheni Damar Lei Chazei Degavra Depara Anam. Okay. And our fourth explanation is now deviate from the first three explanations. How so? In the first three explanations, we were assuming who's the one who's carrying the note out into the public area? The lender. And he's going to be chayev for, again, either because the Tanakhama says you're allowed to hold on to receipts, or whether or not you rewrite a shover, or whether or not you need kiyum hashtar. In other words, but we've been assuming the whole time that it's the lender who's walking out to Rishus Rabim, and the machlokes is between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda, whether or not the note has any value left after it's been paid. Rav Ashi is saying that it's not the lender who's carrying it out to the Rishus Rabim, it's the borrower. Meaning, what happened? Borrower paid back the loan. What happened? The loan document came back to the borrower. Now, as I've been saying now up until now, it is obviously in the best interest of the borrower to destroy it. Rav Ashi says, maybe not. Maybe the borrower wants to hold on to it. Why? Because whenever you're going for a loan, so you need a good credit report. So nowadays, obviously, in our technological age, so you have credit bureaus reporting that you are or not a good lender. Thank you. Appreciate it. Appreciate everyone's listening. In the good old days, so you were your own credit bureau. Meaning, what happens is that basically you're your own best advertiser, and you go to people and say, "Look, I'm a good borrower. I pay. Allow me to demonstrate evidence. Here's a loan document in which I paid. Here's another loan document in which I paid," and you show all these wonderful pieces of evidence. Historical evidence, I am a good payer. And so therefore, what Rav Yehuda is arguing is that Misha Paro, after the loan is paid up, and the way Rav Ashi is understanding it now, and now the loan document is back in the hands of the borrower. And obviously, there is an argument to say destroy it, but Rav Yehuda says no. He'd like to hold on to it because he'd like to show people, I pay. And therefore, it has value even after it's paid. And therefore, if I carried it out into Rishus Rabim, I'm going to be chayev. That's the argument to Rav Yehuda. And I guess the Tanakhama's argument, counter-argument would be, look, it may demonstrate good credit history, but you know what? Better you should destroy it. Don't let these things lie around. You never know. It may get back to the hands of the creditor. He'll come at you again. Destroy it. As far as your good credit rating is concerned, A good reputation is invaluable.
Question.
Yes.
Two witnesses borrowing the money.
Yes.
Why would you need two witnesses when
you repay? Because what's going to happen when you repay the money is you're going to get back your note.
It's a negotiable instrument.
Right. And therefore. Correct. Which then leads the Gemara to the discussion of what should you do once you hold the note back in your hand. So the Gemara's conclusion is you should destroy it because it's legal tender. Okay, we continue ad kedei la'asos. All right, that was all carrying documents on Shabbos.
Is the machlokas that you you have to witness to when you go back home?
There is a machlokus that if you borrow with witnesses, do you need witnesses to pay back?
Right.
But that's a mal v'alpeh. Mal v'bishtar, you don't need it because you're going to get the note back. Yes. Right. That's the receipts.
Why would you even ask them about shtar? They have more than two letters.
Mm-hmm. Right. Rashi.
I think he said there was a space for two more letters. Too, right? Isn't it because it has space? You can use it as a writing. For this one.
Mm-hmm. Right. In other words, the smaller shear is going to be. No. In other words, the small shear for the paper is going to be two letters. But then we're just talking about the value of a note, meaning the paper itself is obviously large enough, but we're talking about a value of a note after it's been paid up. Meaning before it's paid up, there's not. We all agree, you're chai for carrying it on Shabbos. But after it's paid, is there any value? The paper is large enough, I agree with you. But is there any value to this piece of paper? Okay. We go on in the Mishnah. Next topic of discussion, the Mishnah is going to be the leather. How much leather do you have to carry on Shabbos in order to be chayiv? So the Mishnah says, "Kedei lasos kameya," enough to make an amulet. Good old days, amulets were very, very popular. You were sick and you went to the doctor and he didn't help. So the next person you go visit is your local amulet writer. And he writes you an amulet and you wear it around your neck and may or may not help. Okay. Good. And the Gemara discusses Orka de Lasas Kameh. Bamine Ravam Rav Nachman Amotzi or Bekama. How much would you be chai for carrying leather on Shabbos? I'm like, it did not. He says, that's an easy question. I'll take those questions any day. Kidinan, we learned in the Mishnah. Orka de Lasas Kameh. Okay, good. Hame Avdo Bekama. Well, how much leather do you need to tan on Shabbos to be chayiv? Meaning tanning is one of the malachas on Shabbos. And so therefore, obviously everything has a shear. How much leather do you need to actually process and tan in order to be chayiv? Amalei lo shna. Again, same amount. Li avdo bikama. So what if the leather is not yet processed? Unprocessed leather, I carried outside on Shabbos. How much of it would I need to carry in order to be chayiv? Amar le lo shna. And to this question, same thing. Lo shna meaning, okay, you didn't process it yet, but you're going to process it. O minatem rakid did na. Now, how do I know? Meaning the discussion that will really consume us for almost the remainder of this amud, for the remainder of this amud, is basically the following. Look, we have now given a shear for leather. The shear for leather, for carrying leather, is going to be the amount to write up an amulet. And basically what we're saying, and we will continue to say through the rest of this amud, is it doesn't matter whether it's actually processed or unprocessed, but we plan on processing it. The shear is not going to change. And the Gemara now wants to know, is this always going to be true, that there's no difference between processing and unprocessed? Well, first let's make the argument that it really doesn't make a difference. Because we'll learn later on the Masech Tamabim Vamanafis Vatoveh Vatoveh in terms of preparing the wool, so the whitening, the combing, the dyeing, the spinning, Shiroro Kemale Rochav Hasit Kafal. How much thread do you need to process? The shear is Sit Kafal. That's the distance between my thumb and my pinky as spread out on my hand, like this. Veha oreg, weaving, beis chutin, shi'ur kamale rochav hasit. There, it's the difference of just one sit, which is the distance between my two fingers as they are spread out. Alma kema delitvi kai shi'ur kitavoi. Now, what do you see over here? That since I plan on spinning the thread, the shear for unspun thread will be the same shear as spun thread. And so therefore, same over here. Unprocessed leather will be the same shear as processed leather. Now, what if I have no intention whatsoever on ever tanning this piece of hide? So, Amar Le Loshna. And finally, he says, I'm going to sing the same tune. It is kedei lasos kameya. No difference. So the Gemara says, really? The Gemara now is going to challenge and continuously challenge this premise that there is no difference. The premise is there's no difference between unprocessed versus processed. And we're going to see over the course of the remainder of this Amud, there is a difference between processed versus unprocessed. So let's go to our first example, simanim. Simanim are basically any root or herb that's used for the purposes of dyeing. Simanim shurim kedei litzvo behem dugma li'ira. Well, if they are soaking, so how much would I need to carry, how much of these herbs and roots would I need to carry in order to be chayev? Enough to create a sample. That's all I need. In other words, what's significant is they would make swatches, they would make samples of whatever the dye is, and so enough to make a sample. V'ilu b'simanim she'enam shuriyim now. If the roots are herbs that are not yet been soaked. So in other words, it's basically unprocessed, raw material. How much would I need to carry in order to be chayv tanan? We learned in the Mishnah. Klipe gozim v'klipe rimonim sitim upua kidei litzboa behen beget katan lefi sevacha. So the Mishnah tells us that it's enough to dye an entire garment. A small garment, but an entire garment. That's a lot more than the swatch and the sample that we were talking about earlier. So now follow. The question is very simple. Here in the world of dyeing herbs and roots, if they're already soaking, the shear is small. If they're not yet been soaked, the shear is going to be larger. So you see that there's a fluctuation of shear. The Gemara says, agreed. You're right. And you showed me the Mishnah that show a discrepancy. But I'm going to explain why there's a discrepancy. Because if you haven't yet soaked the dyes, nobody soaks a sample full of dye. Meaning once, before the process has begun, no one's going to go through the trouble of getting a pot of water, heating the pot of water, and soaking just enough dyes so that I could dye a sample. No one's going to do that. But once it's already been soaking in the boiling water, so yes, so now I would carry out just enough to dye a sample. But masha'en came over here when it comes to the hide of an animal. Here there's not going to be a difference. Meaning whether it's processed or whether it's unprocessed, the shear is always going to be a kameah's worth. Meaning it would be worth it for the tanner to carry out unprocessed hide, even if it's just a kameah's worth. The Hari Zironi Gina de Mekami de Zarino. Now let's talk about garden seeds. What's the shear for garden seeds? Tanan Zironi Gina Pachas Mechagogoris. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra Omer Chamisha. So the shear is, it's subject to a debate whether it's a grogoris or whether it's five seeds. I'm sorry, a little bit less than a grogoris, or according to Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, it's five seeds. But either way, you see that the shear for seeds before they're planted are whatever. Let's say five seeds. The ilu basa de zarino. Now, after I planted it, tanan zeva v'chol adak kedela zava bo kelach shel kruv divrei Rabbi Akiva v'chachamim amrin kedela zabel krisha. Again, there's a machlokus over here, but once again, you see that after they're planted, what is a valuable seed? According to Rabbi Kiva, one seed is valuable. So you see, before the seed is planted, it's five. After it's planted, one. So ha'id marla, marav papa, ha'dizriya, ha'dalozriya, lefishein adam, tariach lozi, nima, achas lozriya. Again, the Gemara is going to basically make the same argument. Before you plant seeds, no one's going to bother. It is not worth it for somebody to carry out one seed. So before it's planted, the only thing of value is a group of seeds, five seeds. After it's planted, you're right, one seed becomes invaluable. The Gemara gives another illustration. So we saw this already. Water which is dirty water, not good for washing your hands, not good for washing your feet. So to carry you this water out outside on Shabbos, you need to carry a full revius of water. And the reason why is because you're going to use it to make the cement, the mortar for the bricks. But once I've added the water to the straw and to the dirt and to the earth, Now, how much of it is valuable? Enough to make the opening for the furnace. A very small amount. And again, the Gemara says, I'll tell you why there's a fluctuation of shear. Because if all I need to do is make enough mud to make an opening for the furnace, no one's going to bother to prepare an entire plate of mud, pallet of mud, just for that little opening. But once the mud is made already, so then yes, the significant amount of mud to carry on Shabbos would be enough to carry a small hole. And again, so basically, again, we've demonstrated three times that yes, you're right, there is a fluctuation of shear, but that's because lefi she'in adam tarech, not worth it. Not worth it to carry out one seed, not worth it to carry to make one little patch of mud. It's not worth it for the person to do all that. But for the leather and the tanning, worth it. Tashma Dam Rabbi Chia Barami Mishmeda Ula, Shlosha Ora saying there are three different types of hides. Matzah Chipa and Diftera. Now I know matzah sounds like the stuff that we eat on Pesach, but here matzah is referring to the unprocessed hide of an animal. And I will make the very poor joke that nowadays it's pretty much the same thing. Okay, but matzah kemashmalo delo milech velo kemech velo delo afetz. Now, matzah is hide that's totally unprocessed. It was not salted, it was not floured, and it wasn't, and the gall nuts were not spread out over it. Now, do I know what I'm talking about? Of course not. I've never been involved in the process of making hides, but there are three things that are done, three processes that are done, salting, flour, and gall nuts, and matzah refers to it's totally unprocessed. V'kama shi'uro, now, how much you have to carry on Shabbos in order to be chayev, t'ni rev shmo b'rev Yehuda k'delatza bo mashkolas, enough to tie up the weights. Sorry, k'delatza bo mashkolas, k'tana v'kama amarabai riva deriva de pumpadisa. A quarter of a weight in pumpadisa. Their weights, Rashi describes, the weights were made out of lead. It's a metal that really, if exposed to the air, it's going to rot and decay. So what they would do with their weights in order to make sure that it was a constant weight is that they would wrap it up in leather to protect the weights. Okay, that's talking about the matzah. The really unprocessed hide. Chifa. Now it's somewhat processed. That's hide, which is referred to as chipa. The melech v'lo kmech v'lo off. It's salted, but nothing else. V'kamashirah k'dinan or k'delasos kameya. Okay, that's to make an amulet. And diftera, the melech v'lo kmech v'lo off. It's gone through most of the processing. V'kamashirah k'delich tov alav esaget, and a divorce document is written on such a parchment. Okay, and Rashi describes, by the way, that we get progressively smaller, meaning the matzah is the largest amount of hide to wrap up the weights, the chipa is to make an amulet, and a difter is even smaller than that. Okay, anyway, ketani mies kedelatza bo mashkolas ketana. Here's the problem. You see what just happened? Based on how unprocessed the hide is, the shear starts fluctuating. And the whole discussion was questions between Rav and Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman kept responding, Loshna, Loshna, Loshna. There is no fluctuation of shear when it comes to hides. And meanwhile, over here, they were saying that there is a fluctuation. Ketani miyat, kedelatzer ba'mashkolos, ketana v'amra by riva deriva de pumbadisa. Hasam bibishula. The Gemara explains that over here, the reason why there's a fluctuation is because the hide in question over here is still super saturated with water. It's very moist. And because it's very moist, I can't even process it. Meaning it's not even processable. And because of that, so therefore the shear is going to be the amount to wrap around a weight. But once it's dried, even though I haven't done anything yet, I haven't salted it yet, I haven't floured it yet, I haven't put the gall nuts on it yet, but once we're able to process it, the shear is lasos bo kameah. V'atanan abegas shosha shosha lemidros hasak dala dala haor heal hey mapas vavavav. Bein lemidros bein lemeis. V'tani ala abegas v'asak v'or kishir l'toma kach shir l'hotza. Here we have a brisa, and the brisa says that when it, talking about hides, just like the shear of a hide for toma is dalad al dalad, so too for carrying on shops, the shear is going to be dalad al dalad. Once again, that's not the size of a kameah, So the Gemara says, "Ahu bikur tavla." That's talking about where the hide was scalded in boiling water. And once it's boiled in water, so then I can't make a kameh out of it. So then the shear then becomes a shear of dalet al dalet. Okay, but basically the Gemara defends the original answer of Rav Nachman, which is that the shear of a hide does not fluctuate; it always will be kedei lasos kameh. Okay, and we turn the page. Ayin Tes Amud Beis, and now we move on to the topic of cloth. How much cloth would I need to carry on Shabbos in order to be chayv kedei lichtov ala parsha katana, enough to write a small parsha? Okay, a small introduction. Hide is taken off the animal, and if not processed to make shoes or to make clothing, but I want to make parchment out of it, so here's what we do. The hide separates into two layers. Okay, the outer layer is called the cloth. The best way to remember this is a cloth from the same word as klipa, meaning it's the outer shell. The inner layer that comes off is called the duchsustus. I doubt duchsustus is a Hebrew word. It's probably not a Hebrew word. Probably a Greek word. Either way, these are the two layers. So, what do we say in our Mishnah that when it comes to the cloth, how much cloth would I need to be chayav when I carry it enough to write a parsha ketana? Good. Riminu, the Gemara says, what about the following? We have a braisa, cloth v'duchsosis kedei lichtov alav mezuzah. So when it comes to cloth and duchsosif, it's enough to write a mezuzah. Now, on a mezuzah, what do you write? Two parshios. You write the parsha of Shema, and you write the parsha of Vehaya. Okay, the first two parshios of Shema. Why? It's really easy. It's really simple. You don't have to think that hard. Because those are the two parshios in the Torah that contain the reference to mezuzah. So that is why I write those two parshios on it. What's the problem? The problem is that in our Mishnah, we're talking about one parsha, the parsha of Shema, and in the Braisa that we just quoted, it says you have to write enough to write a mezuzah, but a mezuzah has two parshios, the parsha of Shema and the parsha of Aliyah. My mezuzah, mezuzah shebet tefillin. So the Gemara says that when the Braisa says the words mezuzah, it's used loosely. It doesn't mean the mezuzah that we put on the doorpost of our house. Mezuzah over here just simply means a parchment in which I write tefillin. The Karilula Tefillin Mezuzah? Is that, do we do that? Yes, in. V'atanya, the Gemara says, I'll show you. Ritzuz Tefillin Ima Tefillin Metamos Asi Yadayim. Here, this is a Tosefta from Masechta Yadayim. We know, because just a short while ago, we went through Yud Ches Davar. 18 Gzeiras that were enacted in the world of Tumah. And one of those 18 enactments is that if I touch Sifrei Torah, my hand will become Tameh. I know that's so counterintuitive, but one of the Yud Ches Davar, one of the 18 Gzeiras that were enacted by Beit Shammai and agreed to by Beit Hillel. And so now there's a Masechta in Shas, which we don't see in the Daf Yomi, because it's in Taharos, which is called Masechta Yadayim. And here we're not learning a Mishnah, we're learning a Tosefta. But the Tosefta now wants to know, what exactly do you need to touch in order for your hands to become tameh? So, subject to a discussion. Ritzuos tefillin ima tefillin mitamos asiyadayin. Yeah, I touched the ritzu of tefillin. Right? Good example, right now. So your hands are tameh. Bifnei atzman.
What is that?
The ritzuos, those are the straps. Ima tefillin mitamos asiyadayin. Bifnei atzman. Ein mitamos asiyadayin. But that's only when the straps are with the tefillin. By themselves, they're not mitameh. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Shimon anogeh beritzua tahor. No, not the straps. The straps are not give off tuma. Ashiyega bekitzitza. You got to touch the actual bias of the tefillin. Rabbi Zakeh Mishmo Omer tahor ashiyega bemezuzah atzmo. And Rabbi Zakeh says no. Even touching the boxes themselves do not make your hand tamei. The only thing that makes your hands tamei is touching the cloth. But did you see what word that was used to describe the cloth? The word that was used was mezuzah. You see that the word mezuzah can be a reference to the parchment contained in the tefillin. V'ha midiktani seifa klaf kedei lichtov alav parsha ketana shebetefillin shishma yisrael mechal dereshim mezuzah atzma askinan. The Gemara says, yeah, you're right. We do sometimes refer the mezuzah as the cloth of the tefillin, but let's take a look at the totality of the braisa that we quoted. Where in the braisa, there's a seifa, there's an end to that braisa, and it says, cloth, kidei lechtov ala parsha katana shebet tefillin, sheishma Yisrael. So in other words, in the braisa, it's clearly talking about both tefillin and mezuzah. So mechal dereisha be mezuzah atzma askinan. So the word mezuzah over there has got to be talking about mezuzah just in the context of the braisa. So hachi katani, so the Gemara says, well, maybe this is what we mean. Klaf v'duchsustis shiuram bekama, duchsustis kedei lechtov alav mezuzah, klaf kedei lechtov alav parsha katana shebet tefillin sheishma Yisrael. Well, so the Gemara says, well, maybe the pshat in the braisa goes like this. When we're talking about the cloth, again, that's the outer layer. So that's enough to write Parsha Ketana Shebet Tefillin, meaning that's what I'm going to be using for my tefillin, which is Shema Yisrael, and and Duchsosis, that's what I write my mezuzah on. I write mezuzah on the Duchsosis. So in other words, okay, so at this point in time, Ad Kan, we're basically going to suggest that the cloth is what I write my tefillin on, and the duchsustis is what I write my mezuzah on, and because of that, so the cloth is going to be, the shear for the cloth is going to be just the parsha Shema Yisrael, because I'm entitled to write just one parsha for the tefillin, and for the duchsustis, which is what the mezuzah is written on, so there it has to be enough to write two parshas, the parsha Shema and the parsha of Vehaya. Okay, well, more to discuss regarding the proper writing of the parshios tomorrow on which parchment. Okay, we'll pause over here.